they took a sacrament together in the church, and then they themselves privately saw that as a marriage, which, you know, even as someone who's really interested in queer history, I had no idea that that anyone was doing that at all. And I thought it was such an interesting snapshot into her life, because, you know, it shows that, you know, women have always loved each other in this way, and they've always found a way to be together.
You're listening to Beyond the Archives with the creative research team on Origin, Ways of Being. Stories. Through them we escape, we learn, and we are inspired. We take a journey. In September 2024, the creative research team started a lab for living at Sheffield Hallam University to develop stories for the Ways of Being online museum to optimise cultural experiences for mental health in underrepresented young people. Origin Ways of Being is an Oxford research project funded by NIHR. This meant going into archives and supporting others to do so, to search for people and artefacts that told a story. We hope to share some with you and that they moved you, like they moved us. But if they didn't, we hope that the stories inspire you to investigate the archives for yourselves and find stories that are meaningful to you. In this series, we delve into the politics of archives, narratology and mental health, reflecting on our creative process and the challenges of unearthing and retelling stories from the past. Join us as we navigate the complexities of storytelling and the power of archives to shape how we understand ourselves, others, and the world around us. Take a pew and have a listen. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Today, we speak to Beth Hopwood, Creative Research Assistant at Lab for Living, about the tumultuous life of Anne Lister.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Sophie. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Could you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came to join the Ways of Being project team?
Yes, so I'm Beth, and I graduated from my journalism studies degree in Sheffield this year. And ever since, I was looking for something creative to do, but something a little bit different from journalism, because in journalism, obviously, you just sort of tell the stories and you don't get to see their impact. So it'll be really great to be part of a study where I get to see the direct impact that stories are having on people, and hopefully having a good impact. And yeah, I saw this opportunity and was really excited to take it. I'm also really interested sort of in my personal life and creative things, such as like crochet and creative writing. So that drew me into the project as well. And yeah, it just seemed like a really good thing to be a part of in general.
Awesome. I can hear like a lot there about, yeah, storytelling and storytelling from different perspectives. I think like storytelling sometimes from a journalist perspective is very different to kind of what we're doing. But I think you kind of utilize a lot of the same skills when like investigating, right? And when kind of looking for information and finding.
Yes, definitely. It's a very similar practice in terms of researching, but it just means that there's a bit more creative freedom than there often is with journalism with this project, which I've really enjoyed so far.
I think one thing I noticed about your piece on Anne Lister was the creative freedom that you used. It's really interactive. It's just very, very creative. So I kind of wanted to ask, first of all, why — we're going to go on to Anne Lister in a second — but why particularly that kind of like form of a story? Why this sort of kind of like interactive magazine? Why did you want to kind of create that?
Yes, so as part of my degree in journalism, we got to create a magazine, and I did it with Shakti, one of the other creative research assistants, because we were in the same class, and it was called Pride and Joy. It was a digital magazine with like questions and queries and things like that. So as part of that, we got to create a digital magazine and design it and create everything within that. And that was something that I really enjoyed, especially like learning how to use InDesign and lots of different Adobe platforms as well. And that was interactive, but not to the extent which we wanted it to be. So it was really nice, because basically just because we didn't have the skills. So I knew immediately, sort of when I looked at the criteria for the stories for this, like, to work on those skills. So I sort of like did lots of training courses online and like looked at different YouTube videos. And I was like, well, I could create something like the magazine that we created, but with a bit more interactive elements. And also because it was only me, I suppose I could include a lot more, have a bit more creative freedom. And there wasn't that pressure of, you know, getting a grade at the end like there is with university. And yeah, I've always loved magazines. And I think it's something that I want to go into, of that being able to sort of like use my creativity in that way was something that I really wanted to go for. And in terms of the interaction, I find for myself, if something's interactive, then I get way more involved with it and way more excited about it. And so I want to include that because I thought it'd be really good for sort of like the mental health impact of like the person feeling like they're part of the story and like they could go through it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is, and maybe we'll chat a little bit now about Ann Lister. I think there's something about Ann Lister's life that does lend itself to a bit of a gossip magazine. I mean that in no intent. But yeah, so when did you kind of first come across Ann Lister as a person, and why did you want to, yeah, to speak about her in this manner? Why did you want to tell that story?
So I first came across Ann Lister because... So I'm from York, and so it was my first story that I was doing for the platform, and I thought I'd look at something sort of closer to home, so that I could, you know, I'd been to the York archives before and I knew them a bit already, so I sort of was going within my comfort zone for the first one. And as I was sort of looking at their archives online, the York Explorer archives, I noticed they had a section where it was on, so they had lots of different, so there was a section on LGBTQ plus people that came from around York who sort of did incredible things or were really good in their discipline or, you know, made a lot of differences. And I saw Ann Lister and I vaguely recognised the name. I knew that it was, then eventually I realised it was from Gentleman Jack, which is a BBC show about her life and her life as a quote unquote gay woman in the Victorian era. But then as I looked into her diaries more in the archives and had an actual read through, I realised that actually I sort of made the mistake of thinking Gentleman Jack, you know, was very historically accurate and was completely accurate about her life, which I think a lot of us do. And I think I fell sort of victim to that. And just because it's so well told. And when I actually started to read her archives, her diaries, I was a bit like, well, actually... You can't really see who Ann Lister is just through her representation in the BBC. So I thought it was still a good thing to look at. And because she was so close to home, and also like as a member of the LGBTQ plus community, it was really nice for like my first story to go with something that I really identified with myself. And then from there, go with different stories that sort of didn't relate to me. But I thought for the first one, it was a really great one to start with.
I think there's something there around those diaries specifically. And I know you've spoken about it to me before, and also I was very like fascinated by it and the process of actually translating those diaries and the politics of sort of whether we should, and whether Anne would have wanted that, and the idea of telling a story that's not ours but does really resonate with a lot of people. So yeah, could you tell me a little bit more about those diaries?
Yes, so the diaries, she kept a really comprehensive set of diaries for her whole life, and they sort of started when she was around 15, and she sort of used it as a way to express feelings that she couldn't talk about with anyone else. So she created something called Cryptand, which was a mixture of Greek symbols and I think algebraic symbols, I think that's right. And so she did that so that she could talk to someone about it, but in her diaries, so, and no one could ever decode it. And then a few years after she died, one of her relatives found the diaries, I can't remember what his name was, and he managed to decode them. And it was, you know, that she'd had several relationships with women and that she had these feelings towards women. And he actually decided not to tell anyone because he was gay himself. And he thought, if people see that I notice these feelings within her things, then I'll get exposed too. So she kind of, yeah, she went unnoticed until the, I think it was actually, I'm not sure, late 20th century was when someone was studying, and they came across her diaries, and they managed to then decode, sort of like devoted their life to decoding these diaries. In terms of whether we should decode them, I'm not entirely sure, because I found myself a bit conflicted with it, because she decoded them so that no one would ever do it. And she says things in her diaries like, no one will ever be able to decode this. And I think there's definitely a lot of conflict around that, because she didn't want anybody to know about these feelings. And I don't know, given the person that Ann Lister was, in that she was quite a private person, I think about being a LGBT icon throughout history in that way, And it's actually really interesting. They put a plaque up in York for her, and it called her a lesbian on the plaque. And it eventually got taken down because people, and I think I agree with this, in that lesbian wasn't a word that was used at the time. So she never identified as lesbian. So we can't speculate and say that that's what she was. Although nowadays she may identify that way, you know, at the time. There wasn't a word for the way that she felt. So I think it's even, you know, just calling her a member of the community, I think is a little bit troublesome. And obviously we can't ask her how she'd feel about that. But she saw her sexuality as, it was a part of her, but it wasn't her identity. And I think that's the main thing. I think today, you know, a lot of, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but like it can be a strong part of your identity. But for her, it's just, you know, something, just a small part of her that she experienced.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to say kind of what we now, or many people, think of Anne Lister, and how her story and what she had to say in those diaries really resonated, and her as a person living in that time really resonated. But actually, would she want to be this kind of queer icon? Would she even identify with the word queer, with the word, you know, with LGBTQ+, with lesbian, you know, all of these different things? And did she want her life to be known? And she was, as you say, a very private person. And also, she wasn't just her identity within the queer community now, if that makes sense, that she had a lot. There was a lot other, and there was many other things going on in her life. But I think she is sometimes quite a problematic figure as well. And that there's obviously challenge within that, in looking back into the past, finding someone that particular community that resonate with particular communities, but that is actually a whole person, and how much of someone's life can we take? You know, it's a really hard and complicated topic, I think. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, definitely. I found that quite difficult when I was researching Anne Lister. A lot of the LGBTQ+ community can relate to Anne Lister in some ways, in that she had feelings towards other women, and she had to hide them. For whatever reason, she had to hide them. For her, it was, you know, society didn't approve, and in some areas it was completely illegal. But for some people nowadays, it might be that your parents don't approve, or that even still society doesn't approve. And the element of LGBTQ+ people having to hide in certain ways. So people relate to Anne Lister a lot. But then I found it hard because I relate to her. However, in a lot of her diaries, she doesn't come across as the nicest person because, you know, she often had multiple lovers at the same time, was often only in relationships for the money. And she admitted that herself. And actually, yeah, turned out to be quite a selfish person in general, which I think that's sort of, there's a lesson there that I learned, because just because someone has faced adversity in one way, it doesn't mean that they faced it in another way. So she, for example, she was very, very wealthy, and she eventually, her life partner, Anne Walker, was also very wealthy. So she very much mostly thought about money. And I think that's also something that Jane and Jack doesn't show as much. Also, she was racist, and just a lot of things that you would expect, not expect, but that you would associate with people of, like, thirsty people of that time, especially wealthy white people. And I think so it's been quite disappointing to hear about stuff like that. And I think, I think her sort of, like, scandalous love affairs, some of the stuff that she's done, I personally don't agree with in general. So yeah, I think that's been quite interesting.
I think it's really fascinating about the idea of, you know, facing adversity in one particular area of your life, and that not necessarily translating into other areas. But obviously, at that time, there also would have been a lot of other queer women who may not have self-described as such, but were in love with other women, for instance, or, you know, and they would not have been able, or would not have been afforded the privilege to be able to have relationships, perhaps, or to be able to actually write down, even to be able to kind of have that self-description of what life was like. And so it's maybe a privilege for Anne to have that. And I think there were certain things in her life that facilitated her, such as, you say, money, right? She was of a particular class. Yeah, I don't know if you have anything to say about that.
Well,
Well, even the fact that, you know, so a lot of her lovers were long distance and she could afford to go and visit them. And she, yeah, like you said, she could write, she could express her emotions in written form. And she sort of had this output and she was actually very comfortable with her sexuality. And while nobody knew really, there was speculation and she often didn't care. She was like, well, technically being with a woman, two women being together at the time wasn't illegal. It was only two men being together because the idea of two women like possibly wanting to be together was so foreign and no one at the time thought of it even as a possibility. So it wasn't illegalized. But yeah, just in general, she, because of her wealth and because of her sort of stature within the area and many other things that she had at the time, she was able to keep her relationship secret very easily and also establish those relationships in the first place.
Absolutely. And I think she didn't have, or at least money provided her some security in that manner. It's also interesting to think about kind of the comparisons to men of that period. Homosexuality being, you know, criminalized. And so it's very interesting in the way in which maybe the lack of understanding around kind of the female sexuality or women liking and wanting to be with other women in that time was so foreign, and maybe how that has translated to up until today. Sometimes I do think there are maybe I'm going off on one here, but maybe there's kind of like disparities in understanding and disparities in treatment even within the LGBTQ+ community that sometimes I think are holdovers from a time when there still was a different understanding of what it was to be a man and a woman, even within the LGBTQ+ community, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like there's tension between people who aren't LGBTQ+ and people who are, but there's also tension massively within the community. And I suppose it could come from those times. And I think it's also just like the fact that women's sexuality sometimes isn't seen as much, it's like just seen in general as much as men's. So yeah, sometimes women aren't seen as sexual beings in general. So I suppose it sort of could come from that, in that, you know, back in the day it was, you know, any sexual encounter was only for the man and not for the woman. So they wouldn't think possibly ever being together in that way. But yeah, no, I think it's really interesting to sort of look at the context of the time of what she was experiencing and what she was hearing day to day.
Absolutely. And I think we can never remove someone completely from that context, you know, whether we want to or not. Right. Yeah. And that is a certain pitfall, or not pitfall, maybe just a general challenge around ways of being, is that we are looking at narratives that have generally been hidden for particular reasons, and we are telling those stories and putting them on a platform because it's important and because a lot elements of those stories will resonate with a lot of people. But we shouldn't really shy away from the challenge within that of, these are whole people and they did exist within certain times and they did have certain views that you know, we can't really excuse, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't tell the story as well. And I don't know what, if you had any thoughts around that.
Yeah, well, I always think, like, so I can't think of a specific example right now, but if, you know, if Anne Lister had been a straight cisgender man at the time, we would still hear his story, even though he would have had, might have had racist views, or, you know, but any number of wrong views, or, you know, different views. So I think people view it differently just because she was a woman and just because she was, you know, a queer woman. Yeah, I think there's a difference in how people see it in that way. So I think it's still really important to, yes, tell a story, as long as you look at the things that she did wrong and recognise that they're still there.
Yeah, absolutely. Those things don't don't go away and they fit within the whole picture of a person, and that whole picture of the person as well that we can't necessarily know completely as well, even if we have exhaustively read through those diaries. You know, even I was talking in the previous podcast about self-descriptions of sexuality actually, but mainly just self-descriptions of self, and how can we communicate ourselves effectively, and how can we know ourselves effectively. So when we are telling a story of Ann Lister, it's got to be it's almost like three paces removed from that self-description, and we're never going to escape that, right?
Yeah definitely. And I think a really important thing about Ann Lister is that the only things that we really know about her are from her diaries, and like there was no one around her that kept the same diaries or that kept a similar amount of like comprehensive diaries. I think she's quite rare in how much of her life she documented. And I think there is that element of how much of this is true, even though she never thought anyone was going to read them.
Absolutely. And I think I remember when I first came across the story of Ann Lister, it was through Gentleman Jack, and it was seeing someone actually kind of wearing less feminine clothes in that particular time that was felt important to me and felt important representation. And I was like, oh my goodness, that could happen. And you know, it is important to kind of have that representation, I guess, and I think we need to really push for that. But it's that mindful representation. Is there anything else that comes to mind about Ann Lister that we want to dig through? I don't know if I've covered all the points. I guess maybe what was the most important thing for you when telling the story of Ann Lister? What was the most kind of important piece of information about her that you felt it was really important to tell?
I think the most important thing actually for me was that she actually got married to a woman. That it was just a very small you know, part of her life, but I found it really interesting. So she got married
to the love of her life, which was, obviously not officially, because it wasn't anywhere near, get married,
and even though it's not seen as an official marriage, it's still important to them, which I think is definitely something that's even still relevant today. So even like in some places where you can't get married as a homosexual couple, people are still doing things and having ceremonies even if it's not legal. And I thought it was just a really important way, I think, to say that, you know, you can show your love, that love can be shown in many different ways, not to sound corny, but even where it is legal, there's still people that feel like they can't get married because of, you know, family views and religion or other aspects of their life. I thought that was just a really interesting part of her life. And I think another part that I was really interested in sharing is that, like, she wasn't, in terms of the way that she handled her relationship, she wasn't perfect. So there is this stereotype today that that lesbians move very quickly, and there's sort of this that move in together very quickly, and she was exactly like that. And I just think it's really interesting to see that, like, not that she would have described herself this way, but a queer woman of that time is actually very similar to that of today. And she has she has some of the same, you know, stereotypical flaws. Like you said, with the clothing as well, I think that was really interesting, in that she chose to dress a bit more masculine, and she chose to describe herself as a husband as well. I think those are the main things. So that's very rambly, but
no, that's great.
I think like the comparison to queer women today, I think has been really eye opening for me, and I hope that it sort of would be for other people.
I love that there's a stereotype of queer women today, and Ann Lister, all those maybe hundreds of years ago, somehow manages to fit into the same stereotype. And you're like, no. Yeah. but also, yes. Yeah, it's really interesting. I didn't know that she got married as well. And I think that is part of, like, in times of, you know, extreme hostility to people's sexualities and the way that they were, a really beautiful celebration of kind of love and joy. Yeah, queer joy, actually, which is really lovely. And I didn't know that, so thank you for sharing that.
No, of course. I was like, what, they got married? How did they do that? And I just thought it was really lovely, just a snapshot into they were facing so much adversity, and you know, seeing like things happening to gay men of the time, and probably terrified. And this probably just brought them a small bit of like queer joy in that time.
Yeah, really beautiful. Okay, thank you very much.
No, yeah, of course, thank you.